Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Joe DiGenova showed up. Again, Fox News.
I have background on Joe DiGenova.
What?
Someone I know had a blind date with Joe DiGenova in like the 60s.
Nice.
And unsolicited, he decided to sing show tunes on the date. Something.
Does he have a nice voice?
Something from Camelot, I believe. Yes, apparently he has a voice.
Was your friend impressed?
Like me, not a fan of musicals.
Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. Tunes. I'll be right back.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
We are live from Chatter. We're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, Jennifer Street Northwest. My job as I come in every morning is to pick up garbage on the street and put it in the dumpster or the garbage cans.
Is that why Leon's here?
That's what I do.
Hey.
That's what I do. Leon Harris is here. Gary Braun is here.
It starts Michael already. Kornheiser it starts is already. Here.
Nigel will run the board and he will do the news. It's actually a very pretty day today in Washington, D.C. We have a very nice crowd. Thank you for coming. As I say, open for breakfast when we do the show. Monday. If you want to see the show this week, I can't guarantee. I know we're not going to be here Friday, and with all my psyche being what it is, I can't guarantee Thursday. So get here Tuesday or Wednesday. It'll make it easier for everybody. I'll start with a bunch of mail. First of all, I now have an enormous amount of Monopoly
if
things.
If you can't get this across the finish line with all those pieces.
From Matt French in Anchorage, Alaska. Included are some Monopoly pieces from Alaska. Hopefully they'll take you over the top. That's... Alaska, you think that geographic distribution helps.
That's how it works.
Matt says, thanks for all the laughs. I started listening to you on the radio when I was in the military, and typing that makes me feel old. If you think you feel old, what are you kidding me? I feel old. This is from Matt from Baghdad, and by the time we get this, it'll be Matt from Pretoria. Matt from Baghdad here. You may remember me as the guy who gifted you the Baghdad sand globe and the now famous duck and cover duck. I'm about to finish my assignment in Baghdad, move on to my next assignment in Pretoria, South Africa. Before departing, I want to send one more gift your way, a Bag Daddy's t-shirt. Bag Daddy is our embassy's bar, a poor imitation of Chatter, also used as a venue for salsa lessons, as a movie theater, and as location of weekly Catholic mass. While the camel prominently displayed on the front of the shirt might make this seem the ideal gift for Tory Clark, I believe it should go to Jean McManus when it comes to podcast discussions of legal beverages combined with her reminiscences of Catholic schooling. No one tops Jeannie, so please pass this shirt on to her, as she is its most appropriate recipient. In addition, there is a warm place in my heart for the Irish, as I am a nice Jewish boy from Westchester, married to a Jesuit-trained Chicago Irish lass, or as my wife dislikes me for saying, a Jewish-Irish marriage, twice the guilt and half the fun.
Irish.
I think that's good. We have a wedding invitation. Coming up very soon, the 14th of April, in Freeport, Illinois, Mariah Kick and Scott Leiser, or Leiser, L-I-I-S-E-R, Leiser. We have to send this out.
It's a good date.
That's a very good date. It's your birthday. It's a very good date. And from John Carroll University, a box of ties. Bonjour. After hearing that some rathscallion made off with a box of donated ties, here is a box of that. The woman to whom I'm related by marriage and I just moved to a new house in Cleveland. As we were making the move, she took one look at my oversized tie collection and said directly to the ties, not all of you are going to make it. She was right. Please use them how you see fit. We've been giving them out. If you notice the letterhead at the top, you'll see that I work at the alma mater of Brian Polian, John Carroll University. Brian is a fantastic alum, a great person, and I hope Nevada football loses bad next year. Brian is one of the many famous blue streaks. Don Shula, London Fletcher, and Luke Russert's father, Tim. I didn't realize that.
Neither did I.
I didn't realize that. It's a great addition to campus. Students walk by every day. Oh, parts of the Meet the Press set. Maureen donated parts of the Meet the Press set from Tim's tenure there. It's a great addition to campus.
That's cool.
Please... please let Luke select the first tie upon his arrival. Well, Luke comes and goes. You know, this is Rory. I think it says Rory. Is it Rory or is it Ray? It's hard to read.
That could actually be either.
It's Rory or Ray. We don't know.
Rory or Ray.
But, I mean, to wait on Luke, Luke is not here that much. So we don't wait on Luke.
Fine.
Luke shows up when he shows up. Let's start with the NCAAs. We now have the Final Four. And for everybody who thought that this was a tournament of upsets, yes, you have Loyola of Chicago in 11, and then you have 2-1s and a 3. So it reverts to chalk at some point.
Yeah.
Those of us
a
who
very popular 3 when the tournament started.
Yeah, Michigan.
In fact,
those of us who picked Virginia over Michigan State. We were out early, but if you had Villanova, Michigan, or if you had Kansas, Michigan, which is a reasonable thing to have,
that's what
you
I got.
Stayed in. You have what?
That's what I've got. Kansas, Michigan.
Well, but you're going to finish up the track, apparently, because, Michael.
Here's the setup. If Kansas wins, Baby Boy Bootsy will win the big TK bracket challenge.
Baby Boy Bootsy, not yet won.
Get out of here.
Will win.
Celebrating his 9-month birthday this past weekend.
If Kansas wins. Now, if Kansas doesn't win, if Villanova, nobody had Loyola, obviously.
No, Pat 40 will win with Villanova.
Yeah. And what if Michigan wins?
Did anybody have nobody?
Because if Michigan beat Kansas, would Leon have a chance?
What do you have?
I've got Kansas winning, and but I had them playing Arizona's. But I've got I have, in the Final Four, I had Purdue, Kansas, Michigan, and Arizona.
So Kansas is your only remaining possible.
Well, no, but Michigan you had to the Final Four. Yeah. Not a lot of people had that.
I
was shut out early. Nigel, how's your bracket?
Not very well.
Yeah,
I had Arizona, so in the first 2 hours of the tournament,
you were out.
Well, yes. I will point out...
How's Spike doing?
Spike went down with Duke last night. He was alive until Duke lost last night. And I think... Michael's looking at the standings. I am not, but I think I am presently in first, although I'm done.
That is correct.
And I have essentially been first wire to wire, which I point out not to brag. I point out only because I had Virginia winning the whole thing, and that just speaks to how blown up this tournament is. I actually had Virginia beating Purdue, but
I guess zero possible points remaining.
Right.
So who else is in? 40 is in? Is Leon in?
Leon has no chance to overtake Bootsy because of possible points, but he can get second.
Okay. How do you like that? Losing to a kid who's not even a year.
Bottom three,
for Michigan State, I would have had a perfect
Midwest. Hang on, what is the bottom three?
Bottom three, Barry's for Luga, Chuck Todd, and Phil's mom.
Every year is for Luga and Todd are on the bottom.
I got to be close to the bottom.
Actually, you're near the top.
I was out early. I lost my two final teams in the first weekend.
I had Michigan State and Arizona.
No, Virginia winning it all.
Oh, Virginia.
I was out the first 2 hours.
I think you got a lot of points in the second and third rounds.
All right, so let me go over these games. Loyola played great. We'll talk about this with Wilbon, who will try to tell us that he went to Loyola, even though he would have gone to Loyola, and that Sister Jean and his mom are close and play bingo together. I mean, Wilbon will tell us that. We know that. Loyola played great. Here's what Loyola does, as good as anybody I've ever seen. They understand their actual offense. They trust everybody on the court. They are not afraid of the shot clock. They give it up with 3 seconds to go, and a guy is right by the rim, and he uses the rim as protection, and they score. They're very well coached, and they are veterans. They don't have a lot of freshmen. They're everything you could want. They're not as good or as talented as any of the three teams left in it. I don't expect them to beat Michigan, but boy, oh boy, they give you what they've got, and they're unafraid. You know, they're unafraid. Michigan was better than Florida State. That was a bad game to watch.
Yeah,
that was a bad game. Leonard Hamilton.
Good finish, though. I like
Leonard Hamilton. They're down four with 14 seconds to go.
Yeah, let's go home.
And Leonard Hamilton doesn't foul. Okay, that is immediate firing. What are you doing? You must. It's one thing if you're down seven, like last night yesterday afternoon. Who was playing Villanova? When Texas Tech missed the three.
And said, okay.
They said, okay.
Well, and you're playing a team that shoots 80% from the line.
You're down four with 14
seconds. But Tony, I put this partially on the kids. And I mean, that's what they are. They're kids. I mean, to take your point, Loyola, Chicago in the same situation. The coach says nothing. Someone's fouling. It's like those players got to know what's going on. They got to know. I mean, he's not calling them off. He's just.
I'm just going to tell you that if I'm the AD.
You got to be screaming foul.
Well,
what are you doing?
You have a very small chance to win, but you got a lot better chance than the other people in the tournament have.
Yeah.
So you have to do that. Okay. Villanova game was bad.
Yeah.
Villanova shot terribly. Villanova makes between 10 and 15 threes every game. They were 4 for 24. Brunson and DiVincenzo were 1 of 10. They shot well from the line. They won the game. Why did they win? Because they played great defense, and Texas Tech stinks. They had shots around the rim time and time and time again and didn't convert them. I watched the game, and I'm thinking, if Villanova should have been up by 30.
Well, they that's the thing. As badly as they were shooting, they still had double-digit leads.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you about Texas Tech?
Yeah.
What are they doing? Did you not feel that was a bad game? Well, Villanova has to get that game out of its system.
Well,
their
lead, Texas Tech's lead score had nothing. I can't think of the kid's
Keenan
name.
Keenan somebody or other.
Yeah. Yeah,
until
exactly.
late in the second
not
half.
Not until late in the second
nothing.
Half. He couldn't
but
get going.
They were, look, Villanova had open shots
right.
and
yeah.
missed them. Texas Tech was contested on everything and missed everything. I mean, that was Villanova's clearly a better team, and lucky they're lucky.
I think you like to win that way if
they
you're Villanova, because there's no chance they
so
play that way twice in a row.
The best game of the weekend was Duke and Kansas. That was a great game. That was a 5-point game all the way through the game, either side. Wendell Carter got totally hosed on a block charge call.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
out of the circle.
Yeah, it was
he
a terrible
takes
call.
It right in the chest. And they call a block on him
really,
and fouls him out.
And that was a big deal. Not only did it foul him out, it put Kansas in the bonus for the rest of the game, and it was a big momentum change.
And Duke always gets that call.
Yeah,
and this time, and that's why when that happened, because the refs had made a couple of other really bad calls, I thought. The one time they got the guy for stepping on the line.
Didn't.
A couple of tie-ups that they didn't call. They just let the guy
that's
spike
right.
through.
That's right. That's right. right.
And that call and a minute or so later of game action, the ball went out of bounds, which they called Duke ball.
Mm-hmm.
It was five, 10 minutes.
It was. I'm not saying it was obviously off
doing?
Kansas, but it was certainly, in my opinion, inconclusive. I mean, the
exactly.
angle, you
yes.
can tell if the guy's hand was on the ball
if
or not.
It took 8 minutes to figure out.
The last hand to reach was a Kansas hand.
It was really unusual
That
was in overtime.
Duke, so Duke didn't get the call, and they're thinking,
They get into overtime because Grayson Allen does not get the Clayton Custer bounce.
It went in and
out. It's a very good shot.
It's
a good shot. I thought it might drop. It drops if Sister Jean is sitting on the sideline.
That ball was in and out twice.
And they lost that game because Gary Trent Jr. went 2 in a row down the court and turned it over.
Yeah.
And that's why they lost the game. That's it. Now, you look at a game like that and you sort of shrug because that's a really good game.
That was the next weekend game.
Yeah, it's a really good game.
That's a 2-1 play like a 2-1.
Kansas goes on to win. That's a game you like to watch. It's an awfully good game, and I can sit and I can pick out all the things that Duke did wrong. Kansas, the kid hits the three towards the end of regulation, big time three.
Yeah,
and they tie. Look, Kansas, you're a one for a reason.
Yeah,
you're a two for a reason.
That
this
kid
is,
Malik
Newman. He scored
Newman.
All the points
Newman
in overtime.
Newman.
I mean, all the points in overtime.
He was incredible.
So, again, now what we have Loyola of Chicago, who everybody will root for.
Darling.
You know, and then we have three real teams.
Yeah.
Three, I mean, because I think, I don't know if I'm right about this. I don't know. I know that Michigan won its conference tournament. Did Villanova win its conference tournament, the Big East tournament? They've been a one all year long. Did Kansas win the Big 12 tournament? I thought they did.
I think Kansas did. I'm not sure about Nova, but I'll check.
I thought they had. Uh-huh. So, or maybe Xavier won it. I don't know. But these are real teams. These are teams that were, Michigan was not as highly rated.
Villanova
Michigan,
beat Purdue, I believe.
Purdue's not in the Big East.
Butler.
Okay, so these are three teams that won major conference tournaments at the end and showed you they were playing well.
Yeah.
I mean, Michigan went through Michigan State and Purdue. So these are actual teams. Now, the only embarrassment here. I mean, if Michigan were to lose to Loyola, that's a big deal. What was that?
Not just
is that
a little,
the bus outside.
Yeah, we'll blame it on the bus outside.
Get that bus out of here. Was that you?
Damn no,
bus.
I don't think it was me. It was my computer.
So interestingly, the point spreads on these games very close. Michigan opened a 6-point favorite. Villanova opened a 5. Michigan has actually been bet down.
I can't believe
early
it. Villanova's
five
a 5.
Yeah.
I can't believe
Villanova.
I don't think they're five better than
they may be the best team in the country.
I mean, Kansas is significantly bigger and stronger than Villanova, so that's a crazy bet.
Yeah, surprising.
I would take Kansas plus 5. Oh, you got to take that. You got to take that right now.
Figures to be a great game.
If Kansas guards play the way that they did, yeah, I'd take that.
Yeah.
I'd take that.
They're good. All right, we'll take a break. When we return, Michael Wilbon will join us. He will refute everything I have said and give us history lesson, I'm sure, about Loyola of Chicago. I mean, he's from Chicago. Did you know that?
Is he?
Is that Wilbon right? From Chicago. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the SeatGeek ad. I assume SeatGeek can get you tickets to the games in San Antonio. I think they're going to be pricey, but I assume they can get you tickets. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event, whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money because they search multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your personal budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Consequently, you should make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to this high-quality podcast get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you do is download the SeatGeek app, SeatGeek. You enter the promo code Tony today. That is promo code Tony for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Jason Singer in Chicago, Illinois, sends us this from a band that he was in. They get together once in a while, called the Nubile Thangs. Says, we were fairly big in the Chicago funk scene in the 90s. We were known for playing while jumping up and down for an hour. We had our diaspora in 2001. However, we still get together on stage about once a year and somehow still draw. The only difference now is our cardiologist, the man we keep a defibrillator off stage and well within reach. And he writes, thanks for the many years of laughs and all the local DC knowledge, though I've never been. This is a song called This Music Will Never Sell. And Jason says, we spent a ton of money on producing what we hope would be a great record that would wow the biz. Alas, that belief was almost as silly as buying a restaurant expecting to make a ton of cash. Michael Wilbon joins us now from Arizona on his spring break. I'm about to go on mine. Let's just concentrate on Loyola. They run an offense. They share the ball. They have confidence in every single player on the court. And everybody in the country now has attached themselves in one form or another to Loyola. At what point this year did you first notice Loyola? And where is Loyola in the sort of, you know, ladder of importance in Chicago? Not now, but 6 months ago. Where is Loyola? I got to believe it's not anywhere near the top.
Well, Tony, I kind of knew about this basketball team, I guess, in January. Maybe late December. Because you start to notice, I still go back, as you know, to Chicago quite a bit. And I'll go to a DePaul game. I certainly go to my own games, Northwestern.
Sure.
And so I'll catch a game. My brother still goes to high school games. Dad will still go to games. And he'll call and say, oh, you got
to
see this
Your
kid.
Phone is terrible. Like, your phone is...
Yeah, there's
is,
something to be... Something to come with the connection.
It's just terrible. Let's try again. What? Go ahead. What is the... Is Nigel, what's wrong with this phone?
No, now no, you, I'm not sure. Again. I think it's your landline, isn't it, Mike?
It's your landline?
I'm on a landline.
Okay, go ahead. Okay. Go.
I'm
keep going.
I'm on a landline for crying out loud.
All right.
So I knew they were pretty good. I didn't know much about them. There are years I know more about them. And I was in despair over Northwestern's basketball team this year as we rebuilt our home court and didn't have one. And so I knew that Loyola was good, and I just said, you know, I'll get to it. I'll go watch them. But I didn't watch them. And all of a sudden, you hear they're winning, you know, they've won their 19th game, and they won their 21st game, they won their 23rd game. And you're like, wow, I should pay, you know, more attention to them. And in a pecking order, Tony, in Chicago, the pecking order is who's worth paying attention to. So Loyola becomes at the top of the pecking order because they're worth paying attention to. That's how it works there.
See, I think of Chicago really as a pro town. I mean, I know that there's a lot of college interest because of Notre Dame over the years. And now Northwestern has gotten better. But in my mind, Chicago's really a pro town. So I guess I'm...
Chicago's a Chicago town, Tony.
Okay.
That's what it is. It's a town where, look, people, this school, and here's, you know, here's, I mean, personalize this just for a second. So there's a priest, Father Arnold Damon, I believe his name is Arnold Damon. He founded, created St. Ignatius, this little preparatory Catholic high school on the west side of Chicago in 1869. And we know the year very easily. People know the year because it's one of the only buildings standing. There are only four from
the fire. Yeah, from the fire.
The very next year, 1870, the same priest, Father Arnold Damon, creates Loyola University. And these are both Jesuit institutions, and this is what they've been charged with doing. And Loyola's been around, you know, for a long time. And then they moved to the lakefront, and they have a campus. It's not, you know, it's not in Evanston, but it's about, I don't know, 4 miles from Northwestern. And so people know where it is, what they do. It has a huge impact culturally on the city in terms of the medical school, the nursing school, the law school. There are a lot of people who have gone there, and it helps make up the fabric of the city in a less hoity-toity way, perhaps, than Northwestern, but it is a very important place to the city. And so everyone knows about it, and it doesn't need to occupy a particular place every year. There's no consistency there. Like, you know, people pay attention when it's worth paying attention to. And it doesn't really matter whether it's, you know, pro sports. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Cubs and Bears and Bulls and Blackhawks are king. White Sox, when they win, there's nothing like it. But when Loyola was winning, I was in a restaurant the other night in Chicago when they won their Sweet 16 game. And you would have thought it was a pro team. People are screaming at the top of their lungs in a restaurant. They don't know. They never went there. It wasn't about that. It was about, you know, Chicago is a big city, but it's a small place. And so people are crazed over this team and who they are and just happy to be on the bandwagon.
All right, we're going to call you right back on your cell, and here's what I...
I got to go get that phone.
All right, well, then stay where you are, and we'll just sit.
I'll get the cell in 20 seconds.
All right, all right, go get your cell phone.
While you do that.
I will, Phil. This is my job. You know, Loyola of Chicago, I remember Loyola of Chicago because I remember the 1963 team that won. Uh-huh. And I remember Jerry Harkness, and they showed shots of Jerry Harkness during the game on Saturday. And that was, and I always felt this way, I understand why Texas Western, which had five black starters, became the sort of symbolic team for movement in the country. But Loyola had
part of that was about who they played.
Loyola had four black starters when that didn't happen. And there's a story that they were supposed to play, Loyola was supposed to play Mississippi State in 1962 or 1963. Mm-hmm. And the governor of Mississippi then, Ross Barnett, didn't want Mississippi State to play that team.
Unbelievable.
And the coach at the time, Babe McCarthy, who later coached in the ABA, smuggled his team out at night and got to the site and played the game.
Yeah.
And that was considered treasonous by some and awfully heroic by many, many, many more. Yeah. Did you hear anything I said about the Babe McCarthy thing?
Jerry Harkness team? I think that game is referred to as the game of change.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that game is referred to as the game of change, which, you know, in local stuff in the Midwest, in Chicago, that game was probably known much more and celebrated nearly as much as the UTEP.
Yeah.
UTEP. As Texas Western.
Yeah.
You know, versus Kentucky. And so aware of it, yeah. But and because they've had, you know, look, there's only one college basketball championship in the history in Illinois, and that's that Loyola 1963 championship.
It's a long time.
And they kept showing Jerry Harkness.
Yes, they did. They showed him. He looked great for a guy who's probably close to 80.
He wasn't LaRue Martin, but he was the guy. He was the sort of the heart of the team, if not the most talented player. And so that's it. I mean, you know, Illinois has been in the Final Four, hasn't won. Northwestern won one tournament game last year and that forever. So that team, I'm not going to say it's remembered. It's not remembered 1963. How many people remember it? But there's a good feeling around it.
Yeah, I'm old, so I remember it. All right, so Michigan is good. Michigan's a good team. They had a very bad game, but Michigan's a good team. Beilein is a really good coach. We have to assume that they're going to beat Loyola of Chicago, or do you think otherwise?
Of course they're the favorite.
Yeah.
They're the favorite. But how many favorites have gone down in this tournament? Now, granted, it was mostly early, and the tournament sort of reverted in the other three regions to form.
Yes, it did.
But I don't care who was supposed to win. I can't wait to see this game. I actually thought about going to San Antonio. to watch. And I probably won't do that. Unless I have to be in San Antonio anyway for an NBA game for work, so we'll see. But yeah, Tony, I just want to see them play again. I don't expect them to beat Michigan. As you know, I thought they would win the first two games. I thought, okay, this is a team that nobody knows. They're really good. They know how to play. They have veteran players. They have people who've been around 2, 3, 4 years. They know how to play.
They really actually have an offense. They're really well coached.
They know how to play basketball.
Yeah.
This is now a forgotten thing.
They maximize what they can do. It's not showtime. It's not their team.
And so, are they likely to lose to Michigan? Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the whole reason that the story is so irresistible, is that they're not going with the script.
I think most everybody in the world will be rooting for them. I don't know how that'll affect Michigan when the game actually starts, but people want to see Loyola win. This is sort of George Mason, and I know that Butler made the made the final game twice, but Butler's a much bigger basketball school than Loyola, right?
They were considerably higher seed.
Yeah, I mean this is an 11.
Yeah. They're a program that consistently over a period of years.
Yeah.
Would play to a certain level. Now, they jumped outside of that and have sort of remained outside of it, even though they haven't been that kind of threat. They win one game this year in the tournament. Didn't Butler win its first-round game this year?
Yeah, and then they lost in the game to Purdue, which everybody cared about there.
And that was a big deal to them. Otherwise, who knows what they might have been able to do with a couple of wins. But, yeah, I mean, Michigan, these other teams are, for all the upsets, they're total blue blood.
I was very surprised, at how bad Texas Tech was, because Villanova should have won that game by 30, and Villanova had open shots and missed every one of them.
Nobody could shoot in that game.
Whoa, that was brutal.
Look, I told you, I thought that, you said that if Duke played their optimum game, they couldn't lose. And I said if Villanova played, they're not going to lose. Villanova doesn't even have to play their optimum game, and I don't think they're going to lose. I think Villanova's going to win this tournament.
So you're not afraid of Kansas's much greater size than Villanova?
Kansas can win. I mean, Kansas has got a terrific team. Duke let them off the hook. I mean, Duke had them in the last, sort of minute. If they converted on either one of a couple of shots, Duke wins the game. So, no. Villanova, to me, is the best team. And yesterday sort of sealed that for me, Tony, when they could shoot that poorly.
Yeah, and still win.
Win that easily.
Sleep.
Yeah.
And they were able to cobble together a win resourcefully. That, to me, just speaks volumes about Villanova.
They went to the line 35 times.
Yeah.
35 times. And every one of those foul calls was legit. Every one of them was legit.
Tony, they can make you foul. They're aggressive. They're a polished offensive team.
Yeah.
And let me just say this. Look, Jalen Brunson, it's going to be interesting if they wanted to play in Loyola, which I realize may be a bit of a stretch, because Jalen Brunson is the son of an NBA, now assistant coach, and former player, Rick, and he's a Chicago kid. And the Loyola kids, he's got to know them. He's got to have played against them. Growing up in AAU and high school games and tournaments and local things like that, Jalen Brunson is probably the smartest player in the tournament.
He's real good. He has the ball.
I don't know whether he's going to be a pro or not. I love the kid. I actually did watch him in high school. He's just one of those guys, Tony, that you go back in time and there's a kid like him, like Steve Blake, who had a 12, 14, 15 year NBA career. Not as talented, but a guy that means something. Where Jalen Brunson grew up like Mo Cheeks, just a steady, professional ball player who knows how to run a team, who doesn't make mistakes. And I don't think anybody can beat that kid. I think that kid, on Saturday and Monday is going to deliver for Villanova more than anybody else, and they got players.
I want to know if you agree with me on this, that the one call in the Duke Kansas game, they called a block on Carter. Wendell Carter.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Yeah. It was terrible. It changed the game.
Yeah, but it wasn't terrible because he was moving his right foot. I mean, he just was. And you could see it on the replay.
Oh, he was outside the circle.
I was watching with a guy from Raleigh who's a Duke fan. I was watching in the clubhouse.
I hated the
after
court.
A round of golf. And we all were screaming. And Matthew and I are sitting there. And I'm not really rooting as much because I love Bill Self. And I respect Kansas. And yes,
sure.
You know, I do. You know, know Mike Krzyzewski better, root for him personally. I'm looking at the call, and I'm just like, wait a minute, let's see it again. And when you see it again, Tony, he's moving his right foot. I love Wendell Carter, but he's moving his right foot. He's not set by definition. And so it's, and I think they said this on their broadcast, even though I wasn't listening closely. It wound up being the right call, even though it didn't look like that at the time. But that game is just razor close, and Duke had its opportunity. So
yes.
I just don't dwell on it too much.
Yes, that was a great game. Hope that all the games are that good. You hope. All right.
Yeah, and so with two of these left, you know, it's to me, and when you have a Cinderella, when you have a Butler, a Mason, when you have a team like that.
VCU. They were that.
Yes, Virginia Commonwealth. This is what makes the tournament. Because people who plug into this, who don't, they're not following this every year. They're not going to get into the debate whether Marvin Bagley has a position next year. They just want to see something that has some drama to it, has storylines to it. And I don't, you know, it's hard to have better than what they got.
It's very good. Your cell phone was actually so much better than the landline. That's so odd.
Remember the day when you wouldn't listen, you wouldn't talk to anybody on a cell phone? Remember those days?
Yeah, they were like last week.
The cell phone, you say, can you get off that cell phone? Can you go and get there? Can you get a real phone?
No, landlines are, they're done. All right, I'll see you through the magic of video later.
Sounds good, Tony.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls. We will take a break. We'll come back. Nigel will do the news. When we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron ad. This is a new ad. I haven't seen this before. Blue Apron is the leading meal kit delivery service in the United States. And while many people know what we do, many don't know about the types of meals you eat when you cook with Blue Apron, like quick bucatini with broccoli and pecorino cheese and Italian-style shrimp and sweet pepper with incredible ingredients and chef-designed recipes. Blue Apron lets you see what the power of food can do. Blue Apron delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door that can be cooked in under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. Michael cooked last night. Michael made meatballs last night that were fabulous in around that same amount of time. Right, Michael?
Correct.
That 45-minute window. Blue Apron offers 12 new recipes each week, and customers can pick 2, 3, or 4 recipes based on what best fits their schedule, and Blue Apron sends only non-GMO ingredients and meat with no added hormones. Blue Apron is treating listeners of this show to $30 off your first order if you visit blueapron.com/TonyK. So check out this week's menu. Get $30 off at blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song called Bad Habit. It's sung by a woman named Liz Longley. Michael Granberry sends this in, and he says, I'm an arts writer for the Dallas Morning News who from time to time covers music. I'm hearing a lot of very talented young singer-songwriters these days, and I want to recommend Liz Longley. She grew up in Philadelphia. She lives in Nashville. She has come through Dallas several times, and each time she gets better. And then he enclosed a clip of a piece he wrote about her. This is very lovely.
It's very lovely. And I actually had some email exchanges with Liz, who's delightful. And she will be in this area next week. It's the 5th. Is that Thursday?
Thursday.
Thursday.
Next
Thursday, yes. She will be at Jam and Java in Vienna.
Oh, yeah.
So if you'd like to see her, head on up there.
I think that's where the Jingle Fest thing is.
I believe that's right, yes.
So Michael Granberry writes, he has something in common with me. He worked in the Washington Post sports department during the Watergate summer of 1973 as a sports reporter intern. And he mentions George Solomon and Bill Gilday and Lenny Shapiro and Tom Boswell and Kenny Denlinger. That's very, very nice. We will play Liz Longley's music and all people's music that we play during the bumps. We'll play at the end of the show in its entirety. And if people want to send music, Michael, how do they do that?
They can send their music into the show at jingles@TonyKornheiserShow.com.
Chattertea.com.
And what are we selling today? We're selling Chatter T for the crowd in here. Chatter T-shirts for $12.
Just $12.
Just $12.
That doesn't. Are you sure? Read that.
Seems like a typo.
$12.
We still have some great Tony Kornheiser Show hats and T-shirts available through our show's website at shop.tonykornheisershow.com. And Rob Culpian, our loyal little who helps run that store, has sent in some bracket challenge mini hoops that we will use as prizes after Baby Boy Bootsy wins the bracket challenge.
Got one of these in the house.
Baby Boy Bootsy gets his pick of ties.
Oh, I didn't see the logo.
He'll get a tie from us.
Baby Boy Bootsy started crying at dinner last night when Mom was feeding him solids as Duke was going down in overtime.
All right. What do we have, Nigel? You have the news.
I wasn't listening. Did you guys cover anything from the NCAA tournament
yes,
so far?
Yes, we did.
That.
All right, well, I'll move on to something else. How about to golf, Mr. Tony? Bubba Watson wins the Dell Technologies match play, denying Justin Thomas the championship.
Well, he beat him in the semis.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, but it's nice of you to be aware of what happened.
He did deny him, though, when he beat him.
Well, yeah. He did.
So he showed him.
Technically,
but Justin Thomas still has the world number one ranking, though, right?
No, he
I don't think
to
he
win.
Needed to win. And there's been some confusion over what various wins in this match play will get you. There is some confusion because Ian Poulter thought that he had won after his morning match on Saturday to get into the Masters by getting into the top 50 of the official world golf ranking
and
points.
And he did not.
He did not, and then got spanked in that afternoon match.
So Kevin Kisner is the guy who actually lost in the final. And
Kisner.
He lost 7-6. Oof. Michael, tell the people what a trouncing that
is. That is a beatdown. But what the number does not show you is you play two matches Saturday, you're playing two matches on Sunday after playing 3 days of match play. And so he had that beatdown, but he was in a really tough match in the semis versus Alex Noren.
Extra holes.
Who almost won
and should have won.
Torrey Pines.
Alex Noren had two putts inside of 10 feet on 17 and 18 and missed them both.
And this was almost as big as the beatdown as the Kiz put out on Ian James Poulter.
Right, he did
that. In the week.
So this is what happens. Now, nobody's watching this golf tournament because the NCAAs are on right opposite
sure.
this. Mm-hmm. But NBC, to counter-program, has this thing on from 3 to 7.
Whoops.
Has it on from 3 to 7. It's over at 5-something. Because he only gets to the 12th hole.
Yeah.
He only gets to the 12th hole. Who has to earn his money more than anybody in the world? Sanzi.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he's got to do interviews. And he'll interview anybody at that point. This is what happened on Monday Night Football. What they used to say to me was, if it's a really bad game in the third quarter, be prepared to talk for 2 hours. Bring something to talk about. And you have producers who are scrambling like wild to get taped pieces. Leon, you know this business.
That's how the game
goes. I mean, you got to fill because you got a hard out at 7.
You can't good night early. You got to fill the time.
Yeah, you can't. We'll just send you back to the network. You are the network.
It was over in the 5 o'clock hour. I'm surprised like at 6 they didn't run something.
No.
You got to fill.
This is what you've got to do.
And Bubba's a loose cannon. He'll take any interview in a weird direction.
Yes. He's that.
He's
so that was
very personal with what he'll reveal.
Yes. Scary sometimes.
To the NBA, Mr. Tony, Steph Curry.
I'm
sorry, the association. That's what we prefer to call it here on this program. Steph Curry has a grade 2 MCL sprain. His coach, Steve Kerr, said, well, he's not going to play there's no way he'll be playing in the first round. But Steph came back and said, hopefully I'll prove what coach said was wrong. I'll put myself in position to get back as soon as possible. But right now, who knows?
Okay, so Wilbon has been saying for a while now, not definitively, because he's terrified to say definitively that Golden State won't win.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been touting Houston, and he said a number of times to me, like, Cleveland won't get back in. And now I don't think he thinks that Golden State will win this. They've got their four top guys hurt.
Mm-hmm.
One guy, the best shooter in the world, is Klay Thompson. He's got his broken thumb on his shooting hand.
Yeah. That's not good.
Curry's got a chronic ankle problem. Durant has a broken rib at the moment, and Draymond Green is always ending up on the floor kicking somebody in the groin and gets thrown out of games and has physical ailments. And I think, you know, this may be it for them this year. Injuries do that.
Plus, we've seen what happened with Isaiah Thomas. You know, it could take him a lot longer to come back from this injury. So Isaiah Thomas came back, and he came back after being out almost a year, and he still wasn't good.
And wasn't any good.
Yeah. Right.
Wasn't any good.
You're not going to rush back a guy who's got a knee. So the thing that's interesting is...
What's an ankle?
No, it's a knee.
This
injury is
a current injury.
That's two different body parts.
Yeah. So you look at what the Western Conference playoff race right now. One game in the loss column is all that separates Utah, Minnesota, New Orleans, San Antonio, Oklahoma City.
Jeez.
All right, Golden State's going to be second.
They'll be second.
So they're legitimately looking at any of those. I mean, they could be looking at OKC. They could be looking at San Antonio without Kawhi Leonard.
But you know what I think every single day? I think that Cleveland gets in better position every single day because Kevin Love is really good.
He's right.
They're 3-0 since Kevin Love came back and Tyronn Lue went away. And that tells you who's more important. Kevin Love is more important than Tyronn Lue because LeBron coaches the team anyway. Kyrie Irving's hurt.
3 to 6
that
weeks.
That really hurts Boston.
Yeah.
And they just beat Cleveland just beat Toronto, which gives them a certain amount of confidence. That's your squad.
That's my team.
What do you think?
I'm liking their chances more and more, too.
Each day.
And the other thing, too, is that LeBron is getting better.
Oh, he's so great.
It's the most ridiculous thing I think I've ever seen.
I would defer to you on this, Leon, but I don't recall, at least in recent years, maybe when he was very young, I don't remember seeing him this appear this physically strong this late in the season.
He must have his own trainer that's not the team trainer. Yeah, it's a Tom Brady situation because he used to take at least 10 days off every year to go to Miami.
Every year he would shut it down. He didn't shut it down this year.
I believe he is on pace for his first ever 82-game season.
Yeah. This is like a Michael Jordan thing.
I would love to find out what his recovery routine is. And I'm betting that there are some players who would pay him to let to learn how it is he's able to recover.
Because
at his age... Being able to play 82 games is amazing.
This is exactly the Tom Brady thing, where I guarantee you the team doesn't want this. They are sponsored by the Cleveland Clinic, which is a medical operation.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's got his own deal that's not the Cleveland Clinic.
Yeah.
And that team is going to say, like the Patriots said with Brady, we'll let you have it, but we can't let everybody else have it, even though everybody else ought to have it.
Yeah.
They ought to have it.
Yeah. So. Well, you would think if he wants to win, he would find a way to work it in, to work out whatever it is his routine is, to at least hip his partners to it.
But you can understand how ownership would be afraid of that. They have sponsor commitments.
Yeah, but you know what? You can still do as much. You can still do as many public events for them. Put your face on as much of the Cleveland Clinic to satisfy them for that. You know, it's not just because... Yeah.
Really? Because it didn't say, oh, and by the way, we don't let the Cleveland Clinic near our players.
It's just a business deal.
Yeah, it's just business.
Just
strictly
a title
business.
Sponsor.
Yeah. I got to think if I'm the Cleveland Clinic and LeBron commits to doing 15 spots for commercials...
I'm happy.
If I'm the Cleveland Clinic, I hire his trainer.
Yeah,
sure.
That's the first thing I do.
Yeah.
Is I make sure that guy's wearing a Cleveland Clinic shirt.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is I don't know if it's... Again, since I have no idea what his routine is, I'm wondering what supplements he's taking. Does he... I know he sleeps in one of those...
Hyperbaric chambers.
Yes.
Well, it's not...
So
there was a
piece...
I'll find this and shoot it to you, Leon. You'd find it really interesting. I think it was Windhorst wrote a piece about it. It's actually... His recovery is one thing, but the prep is another, and he works out for hours before games.
Seems
so
crazy.
That he's loose
That's
and warm
crazy.
And stuff.
But Brady does these things too.
Yeah. Crazy.
Brady's great at 41.
Yeah.
It's impossible. What else you got?
By the way, I should have mentioned that this news report is brought to you by Shark Week. Sit and watch it with a friend whenever
we'll
you would like.
We'll get to that.
And who would the Cavaliers' first round opponent be right now? It would be the Washington Wizards.
Wizards play very well against them.
They do. They did not play well last night against the New York Knicks.
Yeah.
And last time I checked, the Knicks are not a very good team this year.
No, they're not.
They lose 101-97. We'll take you now to... Oh, by the way, I should ask you, with Kyrie Irving, you mentioned he'll be out. Right now, the Celtics would play Milwaukee in that first-round matchup. Do you see a scenario in which Milwaukee might knock them out in the first round?
Well, if Kyrie Irving can't... Kyrie Irving's the best player they've got.
If he can't play, you'd say, sure, that might happen?
I think the Wizards are going to end up in that seventh spot.
If you take the best player off every team, it hurts the team.
We'll take you to California. a bloke by the name of Mike Hughes. Are you familiar with him?
I don't think so.
Mike Hughes is a 61-year-old limo driver who believes that the Earth is flat, and he's been trying to prove that it's flat.
Well, why doesn't he drive off the edge?
Shaped like a frisbee.
Yes, shaped like a frisbee, exactly, which seems reasonable on a lot of levels.
No, it doesn't.
Except for every matter that counts.
really,
he is also a rocket maker, so he's been trying to launch himself up high enough so that he can get a view and say, oh, there it is. Yeah,
so
it's a frisbee.
So he doesn't believe any of the views that we've been giving him for 50 years.
Capricorn one situation. I'll just waste by you, too. So on Saturday afternoon, he was finally able to get it together with his white and green rocket bearing the words Flat Earth in big lettering right on the side of it. Was able to go up 1,875 feet and land with the two parachutes deploying to make sure that he was not killed. He was holed out on his stretcher, and he said,
That's not high enough.
That's not very high.
Yes.
That's like a big building.
That's a building.
Well, you know, it's a work in progress. You know, it's 1,875 this week. You know?
That's a 25-story building.
Let's see, you build a rocket. A Robert Fulton-style steam-powered rocket, from what I understand.
Yes.
See, I thought you were going to say there was a Wile E. Coyote situation there.
Well, you can see him getting into it right now, and then they hold him out in a stretcher, and he says, you know, by the way, his next plan is to run for governor. And as he said, no, that's serious. I'm really going to do
it.
Yeah,
that's really good.
There you go.
We'll take a break because we just can't follow that. We'll take a break and we will come back with Old Guy Radio. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
On the occasion of what would have been Ludwig von Beethoven's...
No, it's his death today.
It's his death?
Yeah, he passed away in 1827. So what, 191 years ago?
That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
So we're going to play Chuck Berry. Because any excuse to play Chuck Berry in Old Guy Radio is good, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. By the way, it also happens to be the day that Chuck Berry recorded No Particular Place to Go.
Yeah.
But apparently he wrote this song in response to his sister Lucy always using the family piano to play classical music when Berry wanted to play more popular music. So this was his response to her.
Again, when people say, what is your Mount Rushmore of American music? And I go, I don't know, but I know that guy.
This guy's on it.
Has
to be, right?
You guys can take the other three all you want. Chuck Berry's on it. I mean, I'm sure that Elvis Presley would be on it. Whatever happens, Michael Jackson, however it works. But Chuck Berry is on it and played well into his 80s.
Yes.
Didn't he die recently within the last year or so?
Yeah, I think it was about this time last year he passed away. And was that club he played in St. Louis?
I don't know, but Nick Feynman, celebrity intern Nick Feynman, went to watch him when he was a student.
I went to the new African-American History Museum.
Did you see all the pictures of Wilbon? Wilbon's in about three different floors.
No.
Yeah, you should feel very jealous. Wilbon's in three different floors. Yeah.
But I did see Chuck Berry's Cadillac.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They got his Eldorado in there. That thing is like a mile and a half long.
Chuck Berry. Chuck
March Berry. 18th last year.
All right, so there is... Yeah, so it's a year ago. Yeah. So there is... There are two things that I want to talk about here. One is the marches, not just in Washington, but all over the country. And one is the Stormy Daniels interview last night on 60 Minutes with Anderson Cooper, who I thought did a very good job. We'll start with the march, because you took your family to the march.
My family took me to the march, is what I would say. The march was very important to my kids and wife, and me as well, by extension. I don't mean to suggest it was a conscientious objector. And we were there at D.C. with however many hundreds of thousands of people.
I think the estimate was like 700,000.
I've seen 850.
How far down to Pennsylvania Avenue did you get?
6th Street.
Okay.
So, and we got there an hour late. Actually, it was funny. Very crowded, obviously. Never felt any sort of degree of anxiety or unsafeness. I mean, it was a very, very secure situation. At one point... Kim wanted to walk away because there was a guy right over there. And by right over there, I mean 25 feet. And she said, I got to get a picture of that sign. I don't even remember what the sign said. And like that, she was gone. I mean, it was just, she was gone. And it was obviously she was not going to find us. And we were not going to find her. We ended up hooking up about 2.5 hours later. She was lost in the sea of humanity. But we persevered. My mom actually came down with us as well. My kids, my daughter especially, is quite the little activist. And it was very important to them to get down there and have their voices heard and be a part of this thing. And it was really really an awesome event for me, for my family. Just super, super inspirational. These kids. The one I was giving my kid a hard time because I said, actually, here I was all this time thinking you're special. And apparently you're not that special. It's like you're
oh, that's gold, man.
Something about that generation. And I feel good saying this because I take pot shots all the time at the millennial generation, which she just misses. But those kids, and from the jump, this is not news. I mean, we've talked about this. I've felt this way from the jump. These kids, for me personally, have been so inspiring, so faith-restoring. The event was no exception. And these, you know, some of these
wasn't
10 and 11 year old
kids.
It was
all over the country.
Yeah.
All over the country.
And they've been so resilient because the right wing and the NRA have been trying to demonize these kids and turn this into something completely different. And they're saying, no, we're not gonna turn around on this thing.
And let me just point out, I'm sorry, also very clear, because you point out right wing, and I talked to a bunch of people down there, and there were people from all over the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. And these kids, to their credit, have been very strong and very steadfast in expressing that this is not a political issue for them. Now, I think it is for a lot of us, because we're just hardwired that way, being a little bit older, a little more cynical. They spoke about this, I thought, very eloquently during it. Like, this is not a red thing. This is not a blue thing. I spoke to people down there from both ends of the political spectrum. It's a gun violence thing. Sense thing.
Did you hear Rick Santorum's comments?
Yeah, that was tragic.
They were insane.
I'm like, are you serious?
He's not. You know.
Yeah. Quit trying to tell other people.
Learn CPR
to help you out.
That's what he said. Learn
CPR.
Okay. So there is. I'm the oldest person here, and I, this is the first time since I was in college and the Vietnam protests were going on. This is the first time that I've ever thought something had a real chance.
Yeah.
When the tragedy at Sandy Hook took place, in hindsight, you'd say, well, they're babies. They're in elementary school. They're not going to lead a march. But if you talk about high school shootings mm-hmm. all the time, and if these kids understand that it doesn't happen overnight, it takes years, as happened with Vietnam, but they're the ones at risk. If they stay with this through their college years, there's a real chance. This is the first time I've ever felt there's a real chance for significant reform. And oddly enough, one of the things I think of is with the current inhabitant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, because I believe he believes in nothing. I believe that mm-hmm. he could get up one morning and go, you know what? Mm. That's this makes sense. This is my path to staying here,
yeah.
and I'm going to get behind this immediately.
And since you mentioned him, one of the things that's different, again, between this and Sandy Hook, was you had a Congress here that was had decided it was going to be the party of no. They did not. They had decided they were going to obstruct Barack Obama on every single thing he tried to do.
You can vote these people out.
They had the money, they had the powers, right. they had the gerrymander. They completely changed the landscape. And what they did was they realized they were able to say no to any change because it was going to make Barack Obama a failure. And that was more of an incentive for the Congress to take a position that they did. This time around, it's not nearly the same because of Trump.
Yeah.
And because of his core supporters and the rest of the Congress realizing that, you know what, this is one that's probably worth taking, you know, taking
you,
a completely different position on.
You can vote these people out. I mean, children, you voted 18. Mm-hmm. That there were, not only were there millions of people all over the country doing this, but in Gary's household, three generations of people. Yeah. This is something.
There was a lot of that.
This is something that families will finally say, look, we don't want to take the guns away from you in your house. We want to stop selling assault rifles. Yeah. We want to make it harder to get these weapons that are aimed at killing other human beings. I mean, I really think there's a chance on this.
To your
one.
Last comment, know. And this is... I'm not a huge fan of the current president, so this is a scary realization, but it was something that struck me down there, and I thought, you know, whatever party, whatever candidate, whoever it is that makes the connection to this 18 to 25 crowd,
yeah. mm-hmm.
they've now got it. next, because these guys
and the kids are not political.
No,
they want this.
But
to
they are
stop.
Motivated. Right. They are. Yes. They might be single issue voters.
They
or want whatever
to go to school without this horrifying worry.
But if
so
you can, if you
it.
Can tap into them, because there's a lot of them. They're coming out in 2020. They're going
to
be voting.
The other thing, the thing that I wanted to watch last night, and did, was the Stormy Daniels interview on 60 Minutes with Anderson Cooper. Who of all the things that were said, and none of it particularly surprised me. Mm-hmm. I have believed this for quite some time. I don't really know anybody who doesn't believe this, mm-hmm. and I really don't know anyone who looks at it with anything other than okay. So I mean, 10 years ago, so what? There's a lot of so what. But the thing that Anderson Cooper said was, I don't really know why you're here. And I don't either.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What's the end game?
What you want.
What's the end game for her?
What
That's
do you
a
want?
Really good question. And I don't know. I was surprised a little bit. I was surprised about the physical threat that she talked about that happened back in 2011. However, you know, I wish she had gone into that more.
Yeah, do you believe kinda, all of it?
I don't doubt it.
Who did it?
No, because Trump's thing is intimidation.
Okay.
And doing it without his fingerprints on it, which is one reason why he didn't sign the NDA.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There's no reason to not doubt it, but she did seem credible. I didn't think
but again, to what end?
Yeah.
You didn't think this didn't happen, did you? You didn't.
No.
Did anybody think it didn't happen?
No. I didn't.
Yeah. It makes all the sense.
I mean, she struck me as opportunistic, as I would say he did. She struck me as a little bit icky, and she struck me as completely truthful.
Yes, she said, "Look, I mean,
totally truthful. I was
part of this.
Right.
You know, this was consensual. I'm in it." You know,
yeah. It was clearly a business transaction for both of them.
She's very famous now. If she wants to pursue the craft that she is pursuing, she's already in a position.
It seems to me she wants the right to tell the story, which it would seem to me she just did.
She just did.
She told some of it. And the other thing, too, is the way that they played the, you know, the evidence that she might have, like any DVDs or any photographs
I don't think
or cell
she
phones
has evidence to I, you
that part I don't necessarily believe, and I wish they had dug down a little deeper on that.
They didn't do that because the get was important.
Yeah,
you just had the highest rated 60 minutes in the last 20 years.
Yeah,
you just that was the get, and I thought his questions were reasonable. Mm-hmm. He was not particularly sympathetic to her. You know, you hear all of these things and you go, okay. None of this strikes me as out of the realm of believability. None of it.
None of it.
But
I mean,
where,
that's putting it loosely.
Where are we going?
But if I could give the advice.
The one place you might be going is the whole illegal campaign contribution.
That's
where it becomes.
Mueller's probably already looking into that right now.
That doesn't it doesn't even interest me.
No.
You know, that I don't care about.
If, I mean, it only interests people insofar as it could.
I'm just an average, stupid guy who wanted to see her and hear her. And
Actually, if you have been, I don't mean you personally, if one has been reading and paying attention, I mean, if you saw the Ronan Farrow piece in New Yorker weeks ago, like this interview, the Karen McDougal interview I think that was also with Anderson Cooper earlier in the week, there was nothing there that was new to anyone who's been paying attention or reading any of this.
But if I could offer the president some advice.
Glove up. Yikes.
Or stop comparing these women to your daughter.
It's icky. Icky.
That was a little creepy.
Really icky. You know?
That was a little creepy.
And even if you mean it in some platonic form, don't do this.
And
if I'm Ivanka, I'm going, come on. Anyway, all right, that's it. I have nothing intelligent to say about it. Which the people here knew all along.
Yes, that's why they're laughing.
So we'll come back with emails and jingle, and I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Each year from Buffalo comes a voice heard just for NCAA. Tony's got all of those pros picking brackets and they're neat, but only one I gotta hear before I fill out my sheet. 'Cause she's never ever heard of these teams, and she can't even pronounce them, I just know it. But only she had George Mason back in 2006. You know I can't wait to hear Phil's Bombs Picks. I always roll with Phil's Bombs Picks. The way she says Baylor and Marquette and Creighton.
This is great. This is great.
That's fantastic.
Oh, Rick Smallwood in Waynesville, Ohio. That's great.
That wasn't Joe Arrow singing?
Well, Joe Arrow sings.
Joe Arrow sings, but the lyrics are great. Phenomenal. Joe Arrow does a great job. He always does a great job.
Yeah,
lyrics are great.
Does.
Let me thank Will Bond for coming on the show today. Let me thank our sponsors, SeatGeek and Blue Apron. Please remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Please buy our T-shirts, $12.
12 American dollars. $12.
From Lisa Richburg in Charleston, South Carolina, where we're going soon, happy birthday, oatmeal. That's what I'm supposed to say. Happy birthday, oatmeal. Maybe we'll see you. From Rob Lowe, not that Rob Lowe, in North Royalton, Ohio.
You may have just
Ohio.
Communicated with Russian spies. Do you
yeah,
know
there might be
you
some
saying?
Code that we're unaware
of. Dr. Bootsy's grandpa, Hoff Waff. By the way, I got a box of Pro Vs that
nice.
Say Tony K. Hoff Waff.
Ooh, you're
I
like
take
that.
Them to play. I don't know who gave them to me, but I'm thrilled with that. I think it may be useful to remind Luke Russert that if he had the atomic tactical sunglasses, he would have had some assistance with Reginald's ill-tempered cousin. If Luke had been wearing atomic tactical sunglasses, then the minutes after that monkey stole them, Tonto Peranto and a group of retired Navy SEALs would have emerged from the nearest body of water in camouflage and wearing additional tactical atomic sunglasses. The brigade of sunglass comrades would have retrieved your sunglasses for no cost. They may also put Luke's sunglasses in a block of ice for no charge. Hopefully Luke has learned this lesson. From Neil in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, last weekend while on my compulsory weekend trip to Costco, I walked in the store and realized I'd forgotten the list in the car. As I walked back out, I noticed a car next to mine that wasn't there when I had parked. Placed neatly on the back window was a TK sticker, the first of which I've ever seen in person. It was my own David Aldridge moment as I said out loud to no one in particular, "Hey, I know that sticker." Keen to connect with other littles here in North Carolina, and by the way, I add parenthetically, there's like 10 people from Charlotte here today, I got out one of my business cards, scribbled La Cheeserie on it, and stuck it under the windshield wiper. As I walked away, I texted my fellow little and college roommate, John, Virginia Tech class of 2011, a.k.a. the Dancing Pig, whom Mike from Burke, Virginia, savagely destroyed in last week's mailbag, but wonderfully. It was savage.
Right,
it was
Mike does.
While it was difficult to hear a friend get torn apart by a UVA grad, I felt a tiny bit happy for Mike, considering the Hoos usually only get to tear apart FCS football teams and breed cheese. Thanks for all of the years of entertainment and laughs, and of course, Edith Saliza. From Jason Blazer in Lake Orion, Blazer. Michigan. You think your cameo in The Americans was the greatest cameo in history? You ain't got nothing on Howard Fineman stopping by to drop off Safeway coupons. That was it.
That was
I'll hang
brilliant.
Up and listen, we thought none were winners, sadly for us, but it was great to do that. From Eric in Mifflinburg, Pennsylvania. Based on your comments on Friday's show, here are six words not likely to be heard on the Tony Kornheiser Show. This is the Canada Goose Read. So let me get to that. Because my friend David Crone wrote me a series of texts yesterday saying that now he moved from Washington to New York. And it's a shock to your system. It's significantly colder in New York. Right. He says Canada Goose is the warmest thing he has ever worn in his life. And he understands why people buy them. They're not the best looking coats in the world necessarily. But he says you wear them once, you never wear anything
so
else.
So Crone has you backtracking your Canada Goose position.
Well, what is my Canada Goose position? That they're incredibly expensive.
I think it
expensive.
Sent us a box of that, isn't
you
it?
You know, it's yeah. so expensive.
It's never going to replace the Lillehammer jacket, though, is it?
Oh, the leather jacket still works. Why would he need
yes, it still works. From John Rothel.
Still has chiclets in the pocket.
John Rothel in Las Vegas, Nevada. As a fellow former Catholic, Gene should know the rule. It's okay to kiss a nun As long as you do, as long as you don't get in the habit. Well, that's easy. That's funny. Sean Johnson, La Plata, Maryland. Let's face it. If the Chinese space station is going to hit in the D.C. area, it's going to hit in La Plata. Yeah,
that's probably
but
true.
Hopefully it lands on Saliza.
That's funny because it's true.
From Tom Sorboro, Loyola University Chicago Athletics. Because my bid for Loyola University Chicago to become the official mid-major tournament participant in the Tony Kornheiser Show was summarily rejected by your email screener, I've decided it would be wise to reapply in a different category to improve my chances. Please accept this email as a formal request for Loyola University Chicago to be the official mid-major Final Four participant with a 98-year-old nun as our team chaplain of the Tony Kornheiser Show. Unless, of course, you already have another school slotted in that spot. No, we don't.
We do not.
I was lucky enough to be in Atlanta this weekend, and one of the coolest moments came when I was on the court after a regional final game against K-State. As the team was cutting down the nets and the cameras swarmed Sister Jean, I found myself standing next to Pat Forty. So I took the opportunity to do what any true little would do. I leaned over and offered up a hearty La Cheeserie. Made a great weekend even better. Tom Sorboro is the Senior Associate Athletic Director for External Operations.
Awesome.
Good luck to him.
Yes.
Good luck to him. If you're out on your bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
How about those apples?
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.
I'm gonna make this flag. Ain't been nothing like this in a while. But I caught you, then come back and die. There's music I'm loving. There's music I'm working with. First thing today, took one lesson. I'm gonna make this play. My boss Monday for all these other songs. He can tell you money's never wrong.
Yeah!
couldn't stand the smell of smoke till he lit that cigarette. Never felt the temptation until I smelled it on his breath. And the night we first kissed on the balcony alone, well, he tasted like trouble, but he felt like my own bad habit. I can't be without. Oh, bad habit, bittersweet on my mouth. We got a long drawn out story I don't want to explain. I picked up a bad habit and I'll never be the same. Even after all the love we made, all the records we spun, I was dying for more, just trying to fill up my lungs. But I knew it right then, he could never love me back. Still I told myself I'd never feel anything quite like that. Bad habit, I can't be without. Oh, bad habit, bittersweet on my mouth. We got a long drawn out story I don't wanna explain. I picked up a bad habit and I'll never be the same. I light it up, breathe it in, let it all go, then I do it again. Light it up, breathe it in, I swear it almost feels like him. I remember what it felt like the first time. Ain't nothing like the first time. Bad habit, I'm gonna put you out. Oh, bad habit, I will miss you on my mouth. We had a long drawn out story and it was bound to end someday.